Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the release of 13.4 million secret files of hidden offshore accounts by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, whose previous release of the Panama Papers caused consternation amongst the global elite of billionaires, oligarchs, and kleptocrats. This time, it is the Paradise Papers that has everyone from members of Trump's cabinet to the Queen of England ensnared in tax-dodging schemes along with giant corporations like Nike and Apple. Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist Michael Hudson, a senior editor for the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, joins us to discuss the price average citizens around the world pay because of the $10 trillion hidden offshore by the wealth defense industry of lawyers, accountants, and lobbyists in collusion with politicians, which pushes the tax burden onto everyone else below the super-rich, starving governments of funds for health, education, and welfare. We'll also examine the impact of this expose on the ongoing investigations into Trump's ties to the Russians, given how much Trump's Secretary of Commerce and his son-in-law are swept up in the Paradise Papers scandal. Then we'll look into the role of domestic violence, the gun culture, and lax gun laws that played a role in the latest gun massacre, which the governor of Texas is calling, quote, the largest mass shooting in the state's history, with 26 dead and 20 wounded, 10 in critical condition. Robert Jensen, a professor in the School of Journalism at the University of Texas at Austin, and the author of the new book just out, The End of Patriarchy, Radical Feminism for Men, joins us to discuss the links between guns and masculinity in American culture. Then finally, we'll examine the presidential trip underway in Japan, where Donald Trump is urging the Japanese to buy American weaponry to shoot North Korean missiles, quote, out of the sky, pressing his hosts to buy more U.S. military hardware to lower the trade deficit. Takako Hikatani, a professor of modern Japanese politics and foreign policy at Columbia University and author of an article at Foreign Affairs, Trump's Gift to Japan, Time for Tokyo to Invest in the Liberal Order, joins us to discuss Trump's summit with Japan's Prime Minister Abe. And joining us now is Michael Hudson, who's a senior editor at the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, working on their investigation of offshore financial secrecy, and they have just released the Paradise Papers. He was the lead author of the report Merchants of Misery, How Corporate America Profits from Poverty, and his latest book is The Monster, How a Gang of Predatory Lenders and Wall Street Bankers Fleeced America and Spawned a Global Crisis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Hudson.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And this release, of course, following the early release from the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists with the Panama Papers, that was a cat amongst the pigeons, and this one most certainly is. And it's very difficult to know where to begin because there's so many tentacles into the Trump administration, into the Buckingham Palace, the Queen herself. Let's start with the source, Appleby. I guess, in a way, this does reveal this business, if you will, of wealth management, or as according to Jeffrey Winters, he refers to the wealth defense industry. So let's start with that. It feels like you're really exposing the wealth defense industry along with the billionaires that benefit from it.
Yes, there, you know, it's people think of offshore system as this sort of collection of tiny, you know, island havens, tropical islands, maybe the occasional, European, tiny European country like Switzerland or Luxembourg. But the truth is, I mean, they're certainly part of it, but the truth is that big Western banks, accounting firms, and law firms are crucial players in the system, and that, you know, without them, the system wouldn't exist as it does. And I want to note on the leak, it was 13.4 million documents, and just a little over half of that came from the Appleby law firm. The rest of it came from a services provider based in Singapore called Asia City, which is like an offshore trust company. And then we got documents from 19 corporate registries in tax havens around the world. So this is a truly global leak. It's actually a collection of leaks instead of one leak. That really gives a vast picture of how the offshore system works and who uses it.
Well, Bernie Sanders today said that the major issue of our time is the rapid movement towards international oligarchy, in which a handful of billionaires own and control a significant part of the global economy. The Paradise Papers showed how these billionaires and multinational corporations get richer by hiding their wealth and profits and avoid paying their fair share of taxes. I would think, though, that you could go beyond what Bernie Sanders is saying. Doesn't this phenomenon that you've exposed here with the Paradise Papers indicate that these oligarchs around the world are pushing the tax burdens onto the shoulders of everyone else below them? Isn't that what's really happening? This is money that a government would otherwise have to fund government services such as education and healthcare.
You know, that's the argument. And if you look at it, you know, if you analyze sort of who pay taxes and how much, and especially what percentage of their wealth or their income they pay on, often poor people, middle class people, working class people are paying a much bigger percentage of their income ultimately when you take into account things like sales tax, and also when you take into all the loopholes that wealthy people have. You know, they have the wealth that allows them to pay the advisors who can find them the loopholes and create the structures that defeat efforts to tax their money.
So let's start with some of the major revelations. And of course, there was the consortium of which you were a part, Michael Hudson, the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, the German newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung, along with the BBC, The Guardian, The New York Times, etc., belong to the consortiums. And as you mentioned, 13.4 million files have been exposed in this extraordinary release. The New York Times, of course, has been focusing on stuff that's of interest to the Russian investigation, with the Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur Ross, being in the crosshairs, along with Jared Kushner, whose relationship with a Russian Mr. Milner, Yuri Milner, Zuckerberg went to his wedding, has a huge stake in Facebook and Twitter, 8%.
At one point, he did.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But he's also been in business with Jared Kushner. What this suggestion there is, or what the implication there is, that this guy's fronting for other oligarchs closer to Putin, that he may well be a front for Putin. And, of course, the very thought of Twitter and Facebook tied in with Putin is very much in the news in the other context of how fake news influenced the American election.
Right. We don't have evidence of that, you know, that points that he's a front for Putin or people close to Putin. But what we do have is that we have records indicating that he had financial relationships with two Russian government-controlled, you know, majority-owned companies around the same time that he was investing in Twitter and Facebook. And, you know, his argument is, well, you know, the Russian government companies were passive investors, and they didn't gain any control over his company, any management control over Facebook or Twitter. And in the case of Kushner, you know, that's Donald Trump's son-in-law and an advisor to Trump. Milner says that he used his own money, about $850,000, so no money from Russian government sources, to put an investment in a real estate venture that Kushner and his brother and another entrepreneur had founded in New York City.
Well, the other threat, of course, is the Secretary of Commerce himself, who bailed out Trump back when he got into trouble with the casino in Atlantic City.
Right.
The only time the casino lost there, the house supposedly always wins, but in this case it didn't. And that's been a long relationship. And that's a pretty extraordinary web, is it not? There are all kinds of people tied in with that one.
Right. So Wilbur Ross, who's a commerce secretary, when he joined the cabinet, he divested his interest in about 80 companies, but he kept stakes in 9 companies, including 4 that connect him to a shipping company that was doing business with a giant Russian energy firm and an oil and petrochemical firm. And the Russian companies, the key owners included Putin's son-in-law and a Russian billionaire who was sanctioned in 2014 because of his links to Putin. And this Russian company had paid the company that Ross had a stake in, you know, as much as, you know, $23 million in 2016. I think it was 60, more than 60 million over a few years. And so since, you know, since we've made our report, you know, we've had some Senate Democrats have come out and called for an investigation of Ross's business links to this indirectly to this Russian company.
Well, he also earlier he bailed out the Bank of Cyprus, which is a notorious Cyprus as a money laundering haven for Russian money and Russian oligarchs, is it not?
There are a number of investigations, a number of government authorities around the world who do believe that Cyprus is a big money laundering center for Russian cash.
And again, I'm speaking with Michael Hudson, who's a senior editor at the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, working on their investigations of offshore financial secrecy. They've just released the Paradise Papers. He is the lead author of the report Merchants of Misery, How Corporate America Profits from Poverty. And his latest book is The Monster, How a Gang of Predatory Lenders and Wall Street Bankers Fleeced America and Spawned a Global Crisis. So what keeps this system going then? Is it that in turn the oligarchs who shelter either their wealth, ill-gotten or otherwise, the wealth protection industry that I mentioned earlier, and I take it that the assumption is that the same oligarchs who put their wealth offshore also have sufficient wealth to influence politicians onshore not to venture too far into investigating this. And of course, as you mentioned, now the Democrats are starting to look into this report that you've just put out, the Paradise Papers. How far will they go, though? Will they come up against the wall of money and politics here at home?
You know, what we've seen over the last decade and a half, two decades, is there'll be an investigation, sometimes a media investigation, sometimes an investigation by a government that turns up real serious problems and raises serious questions. And there are a lot of promises, you know, oh, this, you know, we're really going to, you know, do something now. This is the end of offshore as we know it. And you come back, you know, 2, 3, 4 years later, and very little has happened. There are a few offshore havens that get kind of reined in, but others will sort of take up the slack, and then new offshore havens will pop up. And you know, there are some who make the argument that, you know, the EU and the United States could basically shut down the offshore system, or certainly transform it dramatically, if the governments made stiff rules about whether or not money from tax havens, places that have extreme financial secrecy, that don't have a strong anti-money laundering controls. If the law was, you know, if you're a big bank based in New York or London, you can't do business do transactions with these jurisdictions until these jurisdictions start doing something about money laundering and start becoming more transparent. So that's the argument. And, you know, there have been international organizations that have been working on this, but it's mostly, you know, it's three steps forward and then two and a half steps back. That's been sort of the pattern for a long time now.
Well, this time around, though, last time with the Panama Papers, you embarrassed and apparently infuriated Putin because you revealed that his friend, the cello player, had $8 billion salted away. And that's an awful lot of money for a musician.
It wasn't quite $8 billion. What we found is that his friend, who was a cello player and had no other sort of business interests, was connected to transactions among a group of people and companies connected to Putin. And we found about $2 billion in transactions, money moving around in Russia and around the world. But yeah, there was, you know, we've been told and have heard that, you know, Russia was upset by those reports.
Right, and there's also the reports that Putin himself thought that Hillary Clinton was behind it, and that ramped up his attack on the elections. But
yes, I think some of the U.S. intelligence agency believe that may have been a factor.
Right,
in some of the Russian hacking.
But this time around, the idea that the Queen of England is embarrassed because of £10 million of her money was invested offshore through the Cayman Islands and Bermuda, and obviously she's, you know, her estates are worth some £500 million. But the idea that she is sort of an exemplar, if you will, for the British people and for the for the Commonwealth, that's got to be really making her uncomfortable. Well, do you think that might move the needle a little bit in terms of anything really happening?
Well, it's interesting. You know, you've seen it from sort of British politicians. We've seen sort of two things, sort of pointing fingers of blame, and you've got one member of Parliament who is criticizing the Queen's financial advisors for their poor investment decisions. But then you've got Jeremy Corbyn, the opposition leader, who has said that anybody using tax shelters to avoid tax should be sorry and called for a full public inquiry. You know, and one of the interesting things about her holdings, it wasn't just the concern that's been raised, is it wasn't just that she was investing offshore, but through her private estate had invested in a Cayman Islands fund that in turn had invested in a private equity company that controlled a rent-to-own firm that was selling household goods to people at extremely high interest rates, and consumer watchdogs and members of Parliament were saying they were essentially, doing predatory lending, you know, charging interest rates as high as 99.9%.
Right, that's the retailer Bright House.
Yes.
And then also they invested in a chain of offshore, off-licenses, betting threshers that went bust. So a little bit of bottom feeding has cropped up there. Also, you've got a bit of embarrassment in Canada, do you not, with the Prime Minister's key aide?
Right. Well, you know, in Canada, you've got, the records show three former prime ministers, their sort of offshore involvement dealings. And then, yes, you have Justin Trudeau. His chief fundraiser was involved in moving large sums of money around to offshore trusts, and there have been questions raised about that. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, the use of offshore doesn't know any political ideology. There, you know, you've got a conservative Republican, Donald Trump. His aides are using offshore, and then you've got a Liberal Party, you know, stalwart like Trudeau, and his chief fundraiser is also using offshore. So the key thing that why people use offshore has less to do with ideology and more to do with, you know, how much money you have, how wealthy you are.
Well, one of the more amusing aspects of this, the reaction to the revelations that you have brought forth via the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, the so-called Paradise Papers. Paradise, I imagine, what is reference to Bermuda or the Cayman Islands?
What kind of Bermuda, Cayman? I mean, the truth is our partners in many non-English languages, paradise or physical paradise, you know, as a synonym for tax haven. Mm-hmm. And so our partners felt like this would be a good name for the project that would also translate well into their languages and people would get it. So, we decided to call it the Paradise Papers. But the key is, yes, when you say that, you think of, you know, palm fringe, you know, islands. And, of course, they're part of it. They're key. But it's not just them. It's the whole world, really. Every country, every locale, that, you know, plays a role by its action or inaction in the offshore system.
And I was going to refer to just the amusing part of the fallout was that reporters were trying to interview Lord Ashcroft, who has $450 million in an offshore trust sheltering his wealth. He hid in the men's room.
Right. It was a very persistent BBC reporter, I think, who
right.
followed.
Panorama.
It looked like it was at a trade show or something. And
right.
and if you watch the tape of it, you just see him, the Lord, sort of, you know, walking in and out behind displays and moving around, and the BBC guy just sort of trailing him and asking him question after question
right.
until finally, you know, there's a shot of the reporter outside the bathroom waiting for the Lord to come out.
And yes, and he doesn't. So, but on a more serious note, some of the biggest corporations in the world, Apple, most people think it's a pretty benign company, but they don't pay their taxes, clearly, and they hide their taxes, along with Nike, obviously a very popular company. How is this going to impact this tax debate, do you think, in terms of lowering corporate taxes in order to bring them back? So far, that hasn't worked. Will the expose of Apple hiding its... I think that its taxes have been hidden in the Channel Islands off France, right, between Britain and France?
It's sort of... Remember, it's often the way you set up these structures is not just one... You know, it's not one haven. You use a combination of havens and a combination of onshore and offshore companies and accounts. and structures, and the way they work together sort of triage the system so you pay the least amount of taxes. And it's not that Apple doesn't pay any taxes. It does pay, you know, a lot of large sums in taxes, but the question is, like, what percentage of its profits does it really pay? And the evidence is that it shifts a lot of its profits overseas, and that it's often paying in single digits taxes on those sort of the big chunk of overseas profits, even though it's an American company and based in the United States, and it has obviously has a huge market. It does a lot of business in the United States.
Well, one of the other aspects of the expose that you brought to the table is the fact that billions of tax refunds by the Isle of Man and Malta have been going to owners of private jets and luxury yachts. Now, the investigative reporter that was blown up and murdered in Malta recently, was she a part of your consortium?
Daphne was not part of our consortium, but it really hit us hard because her son Matthew is actually in works for directly for ICIJ. He's one of our data journalists and tech gurus who really makes ICIJ go. And so she was not part of the Panama Papers, but in the aftermath of the Panama Papers, she combined her own reporting, her own acquisition of documents, with some of the Panama Paper documents relating to Malta, to start raising questions in her reporting about corruption in Malta, about the relationship of politicians in Malta with figures in Azerbaijan. And, her son, Matthew, and other folks say, you know, she had been getting threats, and he was at her house that day when she drove away, and shortly after, you know, he could hear the explosion. It was just a short distance from her house. So it's really sad. Anyone's death is sad, but the symbolism of silencing a journalist who's trying to tell the public about things that may not otherwise see the light of day. It's just really, really tragic, and says something about the kind of society we have around the world. There, you know, and it's not just in Malta. It's in Mexico. It's around the world. Journalists are being jailed, threatened, and in many cases murdered.
And meanwhile, some of the biggest celebrities in film and television, the owners of popular football clubs, soccer, of course, I'm referring to there,
right.
Arsenal and Everton, they're all involved in this world that you're exposing. And
we didn't get too much into it in the Paradise Papers, but back in the Panama Papers, we had a full story that really focused on the just the large number of soccer stars and soccer executives and soccer teams that had dealings in the offshore world.
Right, and as you've made clear from the murder of a colleague, there's a dark side to this as well. Not to mention the basic question of fairness and the disparity in wealth that's growing with a kind of something like 85 families controlling half the wealth in the world. I thank you for joining us, Michael Hudson. I thank you for your work.
Hey, thank you so much.
And again, I've been speaking with Michael Hudson, who's a senior editor at the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, working on their investigations of offshore financial secrecy, and they've just released the Paradise Papers. He's the lead author of the report Merchants of Misery, How Corporate America Profits from Poverty, and his latest book is The Monster, How a Gang of Predatory Lenders and Wall Street Bankers Fleeced America and Spawned a Global Crisis. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back examining the domestic violence, the gun culture, and lax gun laws that played a role in the latest gun massacre at a church in Texas.